Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have. Hey, everybody, this is Anson Williams. You might remember me from Happy Days. Well, I am very, very proud to have been on Audrey Russo's Real Talk. What a great show. What a great lady. What a great time.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. After 3 weeks, our entire nation's economy was shut down. 17 million Americans lost their jobs, all based upon extremely flawed models. And the coronavirus experts have more info than the climate change industry. So how reliable are the climate models? Well, we're going to discuss this and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Christopher Horner is the Executive Director of Government Accountability and Oversight, a nonprofit public interest law firm seeking to bring transparency to the actions of government at state, local, and federal levels. As an attorney in Washington, D.C., Chris has represented nonprofits like CEI, as well as scientists and members of the U.S. House and Senate on matters of environmental policy in the federal courts and the Supreme Court. He's also a New York Times bestselling author of several books, including The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism, Red Hot Lies, How Global Warming Alarmists Use Threats, Fraud, and Deception to Keep You Misinformed, and his most recent, The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information Criminal. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Christopher Horner. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. I felt like Jeb Bush there. Please clap.
Right, exactly. Well, we have a lot to talk about here as we're all hunkered down, and hopefully this will end soon. When we last talked, you were waiting for permission to let the First Circuit see the sustainable funding stream notes from the Rockefeller Mansion meeting. Would you share on that for us?
Yes. So, just quick recap.
Yes.
There are lawsuits filed all over the country. This has been going on for a long time. It began with suing electric utilities, and then in the end, the Supreme Court said put an end to that. And it gets weedy legally, but the tort bar, seeking obviously their windfall, began suing oil and gas companies instead, saying, well, the Supreme Court didn't rule this kind of suit out. So we've been watching this because it's what you would call, they appear to be strike suits, which are, I suppose the colloquial term is shakedowns. They're designed to settle, not to prevail. They're not on their merits serious cases. You can tell by the hysterical and, I mean, on the best day, highly hyperbolic claims made to promote this, the confessions that this, by the lawyers, that this is because they're not getting what they want through the proper Democratic channels. And it's now become sort of a rush for a jackpot. These now municipalities, generally terribly run and financial black hole municipalities like New York, are suing oil and gas companies, and even one state joined in. So it's not just San Francisco, Oakland, Boulder, and New York, but the state of Rhode Island jumped in, and these lawsuits suing oil and gas companies saying, look, you owe us lots of money because you caused climate change, and it's going to get a lot worse. You have to stop producing abundant, reliable, the horrors of abundant, affordable, reliable energy, which is a key thing to remember here and what we're about to tell you we found. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you owe us an enormous bag of money. This is clearly, and I think quite openly, modeled after the tobacco golden goose, whereby the sinner rapidly became a virtuous contributor to the public purse through a legal settlement. And tobacco, go away. Why no? Why do you hate children? What will we do without all that money? This is the same model. Yeah. And I mean to a T. Wow. So there's a gathering now. This is in July. There's a gathering at the Rockefeller family mansion called Pocantico. And it involved representatives, cabinet level secretaries from states, a governor's chief of staff, that kind of representative from 15 states. And they're all what I'll call climate states. There are a few northeastern states governed by a Republican governor, but in on this. And generally, Democratic states like California, Washington State. But Rhode Island was there. Mm. And the director of Rhode Island's Department of Environmental Management, named Janet Coit, was the Rhode Island representative. And a group, a transparency group called Energy Policy Advocates, obtained notes taken at this private meeting of public officials. Wow. Important to remember, these are people being paid by the taxpayer while they're there, in their taxpayer-funded positions. They're listed in the roster as being secretary of this, chief of staff to governor that, and so on. Wow. These are there, they're there as your servants in a private meeting with donors, trying to figure out how to advance the climate, or it used to be purely just energy rationing. It's now become more about the money. It's to get these uneconomic, these things President Obama tried to cram down our throats with his orgy of green jobs spending, and all the collapse that followed. And of course, keep this climate litigation industry and the climate industry. And it is an industry, as you and I have discussed, open records law productions have yielded confessions that it's well over $1 billion a year industry, just the climate advocacy industry. And that's obviously not productive activity where they're innovating something. It's lobbying and PR and so on. So the Rhode Island representative is recorded in notes discussing the state's lawsuit. Now, they weren't there to talk about this. Wasn't the attorneys general. These were the states, and this was the governor's cabinet head for environmental management. And in the handwritten notes, it says, it refers to the Rhode Island representative as saying that the legislature is very conservative Democrat, don't care about the environment, looking for a sustainable funding stream, suing big oil in state court. So this is what we would call a confession.
Yes.
And even better, it's not just a sort of lurid, prurient confession and handwritten notes, which are like a black swan in the open records community, but this is, it's second sourced. It turns out somebody from Tom Steyer's group, the Energy Foundation, was also taking notes, and she helpfully typed them up, and they too were circulated around. And her handwritten notes used the same phrase. And it was legislature, conservative, Dem, don't care about energy environment. If cared, would put it in budget. Looking for sustainable funding stream, suing big oil in state court. So, you know, one could argue, and I expect them to argue, that, well, the poor dear just misheard me. That's not what I said at all. But the two people who apparently took notes misheard her in exactly the same way, verbatim. So that's not really a credible out, though they're trying to make it. So this is important because it's a confession. Look, we're looking for a funding stream is intriguing, right? So that's really what it's about.
Sure.
But you're looking for a what? Oh, a sustainable funding stream from these companies that you insist and shake your fist at the world must go away. How do they provide you a sustainable funding stream? Well, I'm sure we can work out some accommodation. See,
yeah.
But we don't need to be harsh. These are the, you know, get you out of business is an awfully harsh phrase. You know, it works well in the sticks. I'm just looking for a bag of money and every year. So you actually can't go anywhere. We just need to work something out in a little arrangement. Maybe some backsheesh. So we now know that at minimum Rhode Island, the only state where we found notes where they're discussing what they're really up to, in a room full of their peers where they apparently feel they can be honest, saying we're looking for a sustainable funding stream. That's why we're suing people we declare publicly must go out of business, because they're going to be our checks, notes, sustainable funding stream. Okay, so which time you lying obviously comes to mind. What's really going on here? Well, the state of Rhode Island, energy policy advocates who obtained these notes found it was very important for this litigation. This litigation is now before the First Circuit, the U.S. United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, the federal courts.
Right.
Rhode Island wants to keep it in state court. The California litigants want to keep theirs in the state. Everybody, all these plaintiffs and their tort lawyers seek to keep this in state court. They're trying to set federal energy policy, obviously, but they want a local judge to do it.
Oh.
The federal courts have been far more modest, saying, I'm sorry, we have a separation of powers. And even in a somewhat related, though not the same case, in the Ninth Circuit, the judges recently, more in anger than sorrow, said this under our system isn't our job. We've got a process for making policy. It was a different lawsuit, but it was the same idea. They're trying to use the courts to get what they can't get through any other way.
Right.
For example, the people who govern us with our consent, if they want funding streams, they go through the legislature. That's our system.
Right.
These notes show the Rhode Island legislatures, just like the rest, aren't going to stick their political neck out for these billions, trillions that these activists want to keep their system going or for their spending ambitions. And so they're going after energy companies. And they're saying now there's even a nominal taxpayer group that has been graciously supported to a big sum by one of the key funders of the climate industry to say this is really about the taxpayer. You see, we don't have to take this from you. Of course, our lawmakers have already said no, so we're suing energy companies for our spending, our wild spending ambitions. We don't have to take this from you. This is a pro-taxpayer measure. I'm suing all these people for money that they obtained in exchange for a valuable good from you, who will pass the cost of this on to you. But you see, you won't see that. And that's why it's so clever.
Mm.
So this is really a taxpayer measure. I'm gonna set up a middleman. I'm going to make, instead of taking it from you and having all these lawmakers who vote for those taxes lose their jobs, I'll sue those bad people we've demonized and we'll have them pay. But of course, the consumer pays. That's you're just routing a tax through a defendant because your politicians won't enact it. So it's really a terribly, terribly cynical ploy in every respect, not just because, I mean, the sustainable part really gives it away. You don't mean much of what you say at all, do you? But it's now confessed in these notes. And so the group EPA told the Federal Circuit, have we had something you should see. And the state of Rhode Island said, absolutely not. They said, this is irrelevant. It's conspiratorial. And anyway, it doesn't really represent our position.
Oh, yeah.
Back to which time you're lying, right? So just a couple of weeks ago, the First Circuit said, no, I believe these people can show us these records they have. And that was a big win. For various reasons, including this was we needed permission because we needed leave of the court because it was outside of the time for filing, just for various reasons, to come in as an amicus. And by the way, there were 50 friends of the court that had weighed in this lawsuit, all but one having been parties weighing in saying, yeah, get him. Get him. And the only one who had weighed in on the side of the economy was the Chamber of Commerce as a friend of the court. And just so you know, this is actually a related story. Mm-hmm. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, of course, and two others, Jack Reed and Ed Markey from next door in Massachusetts, right, weighed in with a very White House-ian brief. It was nasty. And it was sneering at the chamber as doing the bidding of its fossil fuel overlords. That's the only reason it thought that the federal court should take jurisdiction of this effort to try to make federal energy and economic policy rather than a state court. And by the way, the federal court should then dismiss the case. That's pretty clear, too, like the other federal courts have. And so Sheldon Whitehouse files a brief saying Your Honor, they're using this court for economic interests. Well, what have we found? But notes saying somebody's using this court for economic interests. It's just not as you would have had us believe, Senator Whitehouse. Mm. It turns out it's the state of Rhode Island. It's true. They could be telling the court the truth and been lying to all their friends in that private meeting at the Rockefeller Family Mansion. That seems most likely, doesn't it? That in a private setting, of course, public employees. So these notes were public records when they were circulated.
Right.
That's probably when they were lying, right, to all their friends, and they're telling Your Honor, I'm telling you the truth. This woman was lying behind closed doors with all her friends in what she thought was a private setting. We're telling you the truth, Your Honor.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
that's probably what's going on. So I would expect to see more of this in more courts, because the Rhode Island notes reflect what's going on in all of this, and it really is. It was a truly eye-opening moment. And one last thing, the Rockefellers, when they were notified by one of the participants, someone from New Mexico, We got an open records request, and I'm afraid some of the Pocantico, this is the Rockefeller Family Mansion, documents were covered. And so the head of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, who was the host, and his Sherpas at some policy groups, he wrote them and said, maybe I should use snail mail for these to get around these FOIA requests. And the green groups wrote, that's not how this works. That's not how any of these laws work. I think snail mail is actually covered by FOIA too, ? He actually said, snail mail is covered by FOIA too. No? Yes, it is. But it was a fun episode to see how he knew that they needed to keep these records from coming out. And the reason is they're very educational about what the parties involved tell each other behind closed doors about what's really going on. And by the way, they emphasized the state court aspect. And that's what we told the court we find important. Because for some reason, and we pointed out the reason from other emails, For some reason they really think they're going to do better in state court than federal court. We have emails from recruiters for this one tort law firm representing Rhode Island, that this is far more advantageous. We got to get it in a state court. So it was an eye-opening moment. It was a teaching moment. These are teaching documents, and they're out there. And you can see the notes, the handwritten and the typed ones at climatelitigationwatch.org. And Energy Policy Advocates has filed these with the First Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, and I would expect to see them in other cases too. It was truly, truly a blockbuster revelatory moment in this industry, this litigation industry, trying to spin out the tobacco model against everybody with a deep pocket on one theory or another.
Yeah. Is the reason that they rather see it in state court than federal court because of local justices, or that they think be more favorable?
Well, these emails say there's a consensus in the community that it is more advantageous for us. Hmm. If we can keep these in state court. Now, I suppose we could read that differently, but I take it as they're believing that they have a better chance of a court going along with this, with them, with a state court. There's no mention of this in these emails, but you should know that for whatever reason, there's a tremendous effort by George Soros to elect district attorneys and judges that are of his liking. This has been going on for quite some time. You know about Michael Bloomberg's effort to elect attorneys general who will push Michael Bloomberg priorities, and then he staffs them up with people he hires, truly, as you and I have discussed. These are strange times. But there's also an effort by Mr. Soros to elect DAs, prosecutors, and judges in those jurisdictions where the judges are elected. So that may or may not be related, but it's contemporaneous to be sure. And what we do know is the plaintiff's bar is putting everything they have and trying to keep these lottery tickets in state court. And so they seem to believe that that's their chance for winning. The federal courts have not been their friend. The federal courts have also been far more modest, recognizing that we have a separation of powers, and this is not their job.
Yeah. Do you think it'll remain in state courts, or you think it'll go? I mean, what do you think is going to happen here?
There's a lot waiting to happen. Numerous decisions should be coming out soon, including decisions about investigating this industry out of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas, which is considering allowing ExxonMobil to interview the parties who initiated this. Because you have to remember, there's something very odd going on. The same cities that are suing, saying, you've caused all this damage, we're bankrupt, we're going to be underwater in 10 years, also sold debt. And in their instruments selling debt, their disclosures, which is, you know, you have to disclose everything when you're selling debt, they made no mention of this. In fact, they said, we can't foresee any climate impacts that would relate to our solvency and ability to repay our debt. So again, it just keeps coming up, which time you're lying. So there's a lot of very strange things going on. Some of this is before the courts. Several federal courts are confronting this right now. Several federal courts of appeal, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals around New York, the First Circuit in Boston. Numerous state courts are trying to keep them. So this is before the Ninth Circuit too, and I don't think this will end anytime soon, but at some point I believe it has to go to the Supreme Court, because the tort bar has just assaulted the judicial system with these cases throughout the country.
Wow.
And we know what they're trying to do, and the federal courts so far haven't been accommodating. So there's a tension, and I expect the Supreme Court will ultimately decide this.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah. I want to talk just quickly here about the flawed modeling, which we have seen abundance of here. 17 million Americans out of work in just 3 weeks, shut down the entire nation's economy to flatten the curve based on projections of a single model that now they admit was incredibly flawed. And of course, I'm speaking of the IHME, Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, the coronavirus model, and it was basically garbage. Haven't we seen flawed modeling before, especially when it comes to climate change?
Right. And there's this lesson could be one of the silver linings as we look for them. We've in real time, okay, you're making very gravely consequential policy decisions on the basis of computer model projections. Right. And their models, their calculations, the outcome of which is dependent upon their assumptions, as well as the calculation, the algorithm you design. In other words, you can call it garbage in, garbage out, or you can just say, look, it's a model. It is what it is. It's the assumptions, stupid. In these climate models, if you assume CO2 is carbon dioxide is a magical control knob, which history proves is not, but if you build it into your model, why? You get these lurid projections. And why do you rob banks, Willie? It's where the money is. So you got a lot of lurid projections out there. And so we're making gravely consequential policy decisions on the basis of models. We're seeing it in real time with COVID, where we have, you know, the Wall Street Journal just this week reported that this IHME model, its ability, quote, to make accurate predictions decreases with the increasing amount of data. Wait, what? So that's not really a good model. Well, the climate models are decades old, and they're constantly being fine-tuned to incorporate, to try to make them hindcast, to fit the past. And to fit the past, they have to fudge them, because CO2 is not a control knob. You can see that in from Al Gore's movie, if you pay close attention to him flipping what the detail he didn't tell you about cause and effect, and or what comes first. And so we're able to reverse things, even after doing terrible harm to individuals, okay, and arguably to save lives. You can reverse what's being done in response to climate modeling. I'm sorry, COVID modeling.
Right.
You will not reverse laws made grounded in climate models. And we know that they are proved wrong. This isn't a rush job like with COVID.
No.
This is again, speaking of an industry, and they're now proved wrong. And so we're still trying to make the same gravely consequential decisions based on things, and you won't undo laws. You can undo a quarantine policy. You can undo all these things that are being done in the name of COVID by fiat,
right?
Executive orders and so on. You're not going to undo a law. The UK passed a climate change act that is now destroying them. They can't build a new runway.
Wow.
And they've been told, well, the Paris Climate Treaty and all that, and you passed a law. They can't undo the laws. For some reason, are difficult to change. And so be very, very vigilant to the fact that models are models. And from now on, when you hear models, don't hear predictions, hear projections, and understand that the projections are a function of the assumptions. And climate modelers always assume that CO2 is a magical control knob. And they have a very low understanding of little things like the sun and its impact on the Earth's temperature.
Right.
If you can go outside and tell me if it's warmer at midnight or noon, you'll be ahead of the game. The models really can't seem to tell you that. So this is there is a lesson here, and we need to make sure you've seen the climate industry panicking because COVID's getting all the attention. There was a story this week saying, well, if economic recovery is the priority, then the climate agenda is threatened.
Mm.
Okay, well, I see why they're panicking, but again, back to which time you're lying, I was told that the Paris Treaty is how we get economic growth. And now you're saying, oh no, if you focus on economic recovery, climate is doomed. And climate agenda is doomed. Again, can we get a straight story out of you folks?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
In a word.
Yeah, no. You know, I think you had posted this article by Daniel Turner from Real Clear Energy, and I love the line in there. He said, funny how in the case of real crisis, climate change seems to disappear like a first world luxury.
Yeah,
that interesting.
It's quite something. And watch this, because there's something. I don't know how they're going to manage Earth Day, how they're going to leave all those parks so filthy as they do every April 21st or 2nd in the age of a lockdown. But notice there's such big plans for this 50th anniversary of Earth Day. This was going to be the year. And now this agenda has fallen by the wayside because it is proved to be economically just dreadful. You're talking about rationing energy. You're talking about hitting seniors and the poor first and worst. You're talking about, as President Obama said as a candidate, necessarily causing electricity rates to skyrocket. Necessarily.
Yeah.
And everything else. And in flush times, you know, I go back to this. I've looked it up, and people seem to believe this is a Chinese proverb. When there's food on the table, there are many problems. And when there's no food on the table, there's only one problem. And during flush economic times, the climate agenda stands a chance. It's during flush economic times in rich countries that they make environmental regulations tighter.
Yeah.
Wealth isn't the disease. Wealth is the cure. Wealthier is healthier. Wealthier is greener. It's wealthy countries that impose these severe restrictions and tighten them during flush economic times. During downturns, you see a greater reluctance to pursue these Loch Ness monsters. And because when there's no food on the table, there's one problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see that this is causing them, this climate industry, to panic a bit because they really thought this was their year. Earth Day turned 50. They were going to get rid of Trump, and this Paris Climate Treaty is forever.
Yeah.
And it promises more austerity every 5 years, tightening it for a few countries,
right.
Us foremost among them.
Sure.
So this is going to be, yes, interesting times, as I said.
It is. Chris, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and the work of Government Accountability and Oversight and purchase your books, including Red Hot Lies?
Well, the books are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, I believe, as well. And you can follow us at govoversight.org. climatelitigationwatch.org, and they and we all have Twitter accounts too, which you can find, Climate Litigation Watch. They're on the websites. And we keep you updated on the various filings and the findings. And I can tell you that without being too much of a tease, that there's something very, very big coming. And it's very good that we found out about it. But what's being planned for all of us is a desperation move, a Hail Mary pass. And it if they succeed, it promises very bad things. But we've watched this space. We've found out something very big they're up to. And it's very, very bad.
Yeah, well, look at that. And as always, I'll have that info and those links that Chris just shared in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the on-air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the info and links that Chris just shared. Thanks so much, Chris, for taking the time to share your brilliant assessments with us. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.